Take your golf expertise to the next level with Links Premier, unlocking the most exciting and insightful coverage of the game's courses, travel, communities, architecture, and more. With Links Premier, our latest subscription tiers offer something for everyone. Whether you enjoy reading the print edition of Links, clicking through our digital magazine, scrolling around linksmagazine.com, or all of the above. Plus, subscribers receive priority notifications for exclusive Links events, a welcome discount code to the Links online shop, and much more. Get your all-access pass today by visiting linksmagazine.com and clicking the subscribe link. Welcome back to the Links Golf Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Al Lunsford. Joe Passoff, my co-host. We're delighted to be joined all the way from Barbados today by Ian Woosnam. Woozy, thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it. How's your time there in the Caribbean?
Absolutely wonderful. Just going to go and have a game of golf this afternoon. So, yeah, it's beautiful sunshine, nice bit of breeze. Couldn't be better.
Why Barbados? You seem to be fond of that place.
Well, I first started coming here in 1983, and then in sort of like 1994 or something, I decided to buy a house, and we've developed a house, built a house, and I've been coming here for the last 40 years. It's a place where we can get away from our winters in the UK, and we can guarantee the weather in Barbados, and it's a lot of British people come here, so we got a lot of friends as well.
Now, I understand you spend a lot of time at Apes Hill. I'm not familiar with how much other golf is on the island, but Apes Hill is supposed to be world class. Of course, Ron Kirby, who did Old Head, did the design there and redesign before, sadly, he passed. It's a little bit different, right? It's set about 1,000 feet above sea level, so high up, really nice vistas. What can you tell us about that place?
Well, Barbados basically has a few golf courses. One, Sandy Lane, Westmoreland, and Apes Hill Golf Club is, you know, it's the highest point pretty well in Barbados. So, the course has been there for a number of years, maybe getting close to 20 years. And then a new consortium came in and bought it. And Ron Kirby came in, redesigned it, changed a few holes here, there, and everywhere. Apes Hill is one of the beautifulest scenery that you get in the world. So once you get up to sort of the 12th hole, 13th, 14th, you're looking over the Caribbean side of the island and the sea. And you're also looking over the eastern side, which is the Atlantic Sea. And it's a great experience for anybody who's coming to Barbados to have that experience of seeing that view and playing up there. And that, so as I say, it's a little higher than some of the other golf courses, and it's a nice breezy course, and it keeps you cool, and it's a great experience. The clubhouse has been done. We've got a little 9-hole course called Baby Apes now, and it's turned into an excellent, fantastic facility.
Very good. Joe, I know you're a big fan of Old Head. Have you been to Apes Hill or Barbados even?
You know, in all my travels, I actually have not had a chance to go to Barbados, but I certainly love the idea of playing a quick round of golf on a course called Baby Apes.
Yeah, Baby Apes is just a par three. And what they've done, designed 9 holes of 9 different little holes from around the world. And they've made that a little walking course, so you just grab a little bag and walk around it. You'd only need so many golf clubs, and it's a nice, and it's all around the clubhouse, pretty well on the practice ground, and you can lazily go around there and play, and come in and have a nice little cocktail. So it is nice.
The entire setup sounds magnificent when you get a little elevation involved, meaning Apes Hill, and championship course, short course, and obviously it's a very nice lifestyle if you're waking up enjoying perhaps a beverage or two in the Caribbean, and good for you. 40 years of that has probably been fantastic.
Yeah, it has. And lately I've been getting involved with Apes Hill and become an ambassador and trying to do interviews like that to get it more recognized, because it's a special place to, first of all, to come to Barbados, but then we got these golf courses here where people don't know about as well.
I'll say this to Ian. Is Apes Hill a purely residential community, or is there a resort component to it as well?
It's resort. It's all resort. It's I don't know how many houses. I think there could be in the region of 300 houses to be built or being built, and be a totally, it's a big property. And I do think eventually to see in the future, and that's quite a long time where it could be built another, it could be another 18 hole built as well. So and that's way in the future, I would say.
Sure, plenty already there, but most likely plenty to come too. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Is there anywhere in the world you particularly like traveling other than Barbados?
Well, we've been coming here for 40 years, there's something that keeps us here. But as you know, it's I've pretty well traveled all the world. You got it's hard to beat Maui. Hawaii. You come, you can understand. Where are you guys? Where are you based at?
Oh, North Carolina for me and
Oh, yeah.
Joe's
It's
out.
I'm in Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah, you. So if Phoenix is easier to go to the Caribbean, to Maui, and if you're at this end, it's easier to come down to Barbados. But they're very similar, and you're in the ocean, you're surrounded by the ocean. There's nothing like it.
I needed a good excuse to get to Barbados.
Oh yeah, if you come on down and maybe have a game of golf for you, maybe.
I'll
Now,
take it.
that sounds like an invitation.
If
you buy me a cocktail.
Yeah, I guarantee it. Yeah, I'll buy you two. How about that?
Right, okay, that's fair enough.
The opportunity to come and play with a former world number one and winner of the 1991 Masters. I was born in September 1990, so you would have been the first Masters winner these eyes have ever seen. What do you remember from that week? And can you refresh my memory? Because I don't think I remember much.
I'd had a fantastic year in 1987. I'd won like eight tournaments around the world, and fortunately, I didn't get into the Masters 1987, but I got in 88. So I think 91 was my first year, and I was having another fantastic year. I'd won a couple of tournaments in the Europe, and then I played in New Orleans a couple of weeks before I won there, so I was on a high. And I came into the Masters, and on the Monday morning, I became world number one, which was incredible, a dream come true. And to be standing on the first tee is, being the world number one, I think that gave me a really big boost for that week. And I felt if I was ever going to win a major tournament, it was always going to be Augusta for some reason. I felt that it suited my game, a nice big high draw. I was pretty good in my irons. If anything, I wasn't the greatest putter in the world, but I felt at Augusta, if I could put the ball in the right positions on the greens, that was a benefit, and that's what I did. First round, I shot 72, and I changed my putter then to a tad more. I experimented with it for 3 hours on a Thursday evening, and I decided to go with it. I was more confident from 3 foot, and I think that was my winning club that week. My driver and my putting was incredible. So, I'd have to say thanks to Tad Moore, who was designer of that putter, and part of him is, and we've been big friends since, and it's a big part of that winning that putt on the 18th green was with his putter was incredible.
So you mentioned getting a lot of confidence from being the number one player in the world, and you went on for almost a year to hold that number one ranking. After that week, I mean, you obviously have to be in an all-time high from a confidence standpoint, but what other feelings of being number one are there? Is it pure confidence for you? Is there any pressure involved, or is it all just kind of pride at being at the top of your sport?
I think people don't really understand what it's like being sort of winning a major or winning majors, being the best at your sport. The demand from people, media, the public, it was a bit of a shock for me. It was I went to another level. I got to, and I'll be honest, and I didn't really enjoy it, and I felt that, I wasn't, I think that was a big play on my game where I didn't, we went down, all my goals are gone. I'd won a major. Maybe my goal should have been to win 10 majors. I didn't put that. I only had one to win one major. And yeah, life is a much more difficult place and harder when you've won a major and become world number one. There's a lot more demands on your life.
Take your golf expertise to the next level with Lynx Premier, unlocking the most exciting and insightful coverage of the game's courses, travel, communities, architecture, and more. With Lynx Premier, our latest subscription tiers offer something for everyone. Whether you enjoy reading the print edition of Lynx, clicking through our digital magazine, scrolling around lynxmagazine.com, or all of the above. Plus, subscribers receive priority notifications for exclusive Lynx events, a welcome discount code to the Lynx online shop, and much more. Get your all-access pass today by visiting lynxmagazine.com and clicking the subscribe link.
Your last Masters was in 2019, correct?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I know you were very emotional coming up 18, and that's a memory. I mean, there was another memory. A guy named Tiger Woods made a great comeback to win that Masters. But you were very emotional coming up 18. When you think about playing in the Masters, having a career where you were number one and won so many tournaments on the European Tour and elsewhere, how do you look back at your Masters career and all that you accomplished as a golfer?
Yeah, I think, you played about eventually getting the Masters. I didn't have that many good results there, but, obviously won there. But I think more, again, I didn't really put good enough to win again. But I had a lot of times where I played good enough. And I think that's what I love playing at the Masters, is that, it's not really about, well, obviously you want to win, but it's just the experience of being in the tournament and, just being part of that history of that tournament. I think that's why I was so emotional, and I was not going to have that again. Although I go on a Sunday and I take a friend and I play, and it's just not the same when I play in the par three. And when you're basically saying goodbye to something that you love so much, and and you're not going to have that, even if you're finishing 50th, you're losing that. Just feel like you're losing some of that competitive edge from you. You're giving it away, and that was a sad thing.
What was the feeling like when you had won the Masters, now all that came with it, but one of the things that came with it was the Masters dinner, the Champions dinner the next year, and you were asked to pick a menu, and now you're sitting with all of these Masters champions. What was that like for you?
Well, I think very emotional, very nervous, because you're sitting these greats, and basically, ordering the food. I ordered Welsh lamb and a typical Welsh dinner and some Welsh wines. And yeah, that was not a problem. But I think getting up there and accepting your medal from, it was a Byron Nelson at the time. And then having to speak in front of these greats, it's something that it's very emotional. Like, and when I'm at the dinner on a Tuesday night, and you look at the guy standing there who's obviously a new time, first time win if he hasn't won before, and you can see his eyeballs going around thinking, what's he going to say? Look at these guys here. What are I going to say to these great golfers? What can I say to them which is different to what they've said before? And I think as players, we understand what's going on. It's basically like, get on with it. Let's get our dinner down, let's have a couple of drinks, and let's get home. So, yeah. Now it's nice. It's nice growing older, but time's going past, isn't it?
Boy, for sure. Al, what else would you like to know from me? And while we've got him,
well, one of the things that you occupy your time with these days is running the golf design business, Raw Golf Design, with DJ Russell, another former player.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that? What's your interest in golf course design, and what's your philosophy? What do you like to do in building a golf course?
Building a golf course, for my philosophy, is it's for everyone, and everybody should have an opportunity to be able to get it on a green. You know, not you can imagine you're standing there and you've got to hit it over this water, and there's no other way of getting all of it. For a lot of people, just have to pick it up and walk around the water. But you know, it's like, let's say you can only carry it so far, and you can run it. You could sort of run it into greens, and that's my philosophy. A golf course is not just built for professional golfers. It's built for 99% of the, or 99% of people who of all standards, and that's why I love to see that different styles of golf where you run off the greens, you can putt it, you can pitch it, you can run it, and you know, a bit Scottish, but not every piece of land is that like that. So you have to have a little bit more imagination wherever you're building a golf course as well. So you know, it's I just like to have the opportunity to. It doesn't matter if you're 5 years of age or you're 95 years of age, you still got the opportunity to play golf.
You know, I've got a few years on Al. So the first big tournament that I covered from a media perspective was at a golf course that looked like a Lynx but didn't always play like a Lynx. That was the 1991 Ryder Cup at Kiawah Islands Ocean Course. What do you remember about that week, one of the most memorable in Ryder Cup history?
Well, incredible. As you know, though, is that if you missed the fairway, you went in the sand. And especially with the amount of crowd around, it was all sort of chewed up and everything. But yeah, exactly. That was, it's sort of golf course that it was very demanding. You know, you just had to be precise. And that's what Pete Dye did. It was incredible design work. But as we know, and over the years, he softened it up around the greens. There's more grass around it. So you were either sort of on the sort of putting surface or just round it, or you were in the sand. And it was like a golf course in the middle of a desert, wasn't it? So it was a new experience for everybody a little bit. So we were all struggling a little bit.
But what a finish. I mean, I remember Seve saying that no man should ever have to face that kind of pressure. What do you remember as a team member looking on as all this was unfolding?
Well, you know, coming down the last, so Irwin and Langer, Irwin had gone left, and you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, that ball shouldn't have finished where it did, but it is what it is. And then, but unfortunately for Bernie, where his second shot finished, it was just off the right hand side of the green, and of course now he's got a sprinkler in the way, and he couldn't get a drop, so he just tried to, I think he chipped it or round it or something, and it went about 6 foot past or something, or 7 foot
yep.
past. And then you know, you're all on the side, and it ends up coming down to Bernard to all this putt. And you know, unfortunately for him, they're a bit different in these days. There was a big pitch mark, big spike mark, and it was right on his line. You know, this is Bernard. You know, he decided he tried to go around it, and it, you know, obviously just caught the lip and missed, and it was all over. But unfortunate, but for anybody to be in that, sir. So for anybody, even if it was Ail or Bernard, it was an hell of an experience to be. You know, that's what Ryder Cups are all about, that tension. Nick, how many times has it been like this? It's been fantastic over the last 30, 40 years, the Ryder Cup. It's I started in 1987. That was my, when did I fit? My first one, I'm 90, I can't remember. not 87, 83 was my first one. There you go, that's 40 years ago. So yeah, from since then, it's been so, so close and so exciting. Now the American guys are, you know, everybody wants to be on that Ryder Cup team. And it's, you know, if you're not on it, it's like you're not part of golf in history anymore. And that's what's so exciting about it.
Ian, I've played about a dozen different courses in Wales.
Yeah.
And some of the big ones, Celtic Manor and Royal Porthcawl, and some of the smaller ones. But I've been lucky in my travels to do that. If you had to recommend for our traveling golfers who follow us at Links, a true hidden gem, one that you can't miss if you're going to go to Wales, what course would that be?
Did you play Abu Dhabi?
I did. Yes, Bernard Darwin's favorite place.
And then Royal St. David's next to it.
You tell us about Abu Dhabi and a little bit about Royal David's, and I'll.
Well, they're right mid Wales, really, and from where I used to live, it was about an hour and a half drive. I used to go inland, so I used to come out to these two courses where I used to live in Shropshire, Oswestry. So in the winter we would drive out there because it wouldn't be frosty or frozen. It would be cold, but we could still play. So I spent a lot of time playing on these golf courses, and there are some hidden gems out there. And a lot of people, I don't know if it's the Wales itself, it doesn't advertise enough about these places. It's like, as you say, you could go down a Celtic Manor, although it's an inland golf course, but you've got Porthcawl, but you've got Swansea, and you've got some great golf courses all the way up, going up the west coast of Wales, and especially them two, which is mid Wales. And then you get into North Wales, Llandudno, there's a Conwy Golf Club, there's loads up there to play it. And if people are traveling and they've been to Ireland, they've been to Scotland, and been to England, maybe it's time to come to Wales and play some golf as well.
Yeah, Harlech, Royal St. David's with a castle right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been always been one I can remember when I used to play there when I'm 12 years of age. And one time before sprinklers, where before automatic
Sure.
sprinklers, there used to be just big holes at the back of the greens. So they would come with a truck, we'd add a pump on it, they'd suck it out and pump it, because it's all like peaty water, and it flood the greens. That's what they used to do once a day, flood them. And before automatic sprinklers and everything, the greens were absolutely pure. They were like billiard tables, they were the best greens, most probably in the country, most probably at one time.
How about that?
I'm sure
Yeah.
that peaty water smells delightful, I'm quite sure.
Well, it's up in Scotland, they use it for drinking, making whiskey out of
There you go.
it.
All right, last one for me. The story goes when you were in your early days on the European tour, you rode around in a camper van eating baked beans. So I just wonder if you still enjoy your baked beans or what your delicacies are these days.
Yeah, I'll tell you the truth, baked beans and some eggs and bacon and toast, and yeah, you can't really beat that. But yeah, at one time traveling around, I was talking about this earlier, is that I started in 1978, got no money, but you could travel from each country. Like, let's say you'd start in Portugal, then you would go to Spain, then we go to Italy, then we go to France, and then you work your way back to the UK. That's how the European tour went them days. And so you could drive to them, and I would park on the practice ground, use the facilities at the golf club, and I would practice and practice and practice. And in a way, I guess I forget how much I practiced when I was young, because I spent so much time, which didn't really have anything to do. And so I was on the range a lot, and it was a fantastic experience for any young man. There was a few of us did it, who had the same sort of thing. We traveled from week to week doing that. So we were like a trucking place going, and because it was that we had to pre-qualify as well. It was called, you can remember that song called We Ate Mondays, and it was like that. You have to qualify on a Monday to try and get in the tournament. And if you didn't get in, you drove off to the next tournament and practice and played. And it was an incredible experience for a young man. But these days they're all different. They're all they fly from here to there, and you go to college, they come out with great big contracts and everything. But in them days, it was a great experience and hell of a way to learn how to play golf.
Sounds pretty fun to me.
When you had
In
no
a
money,
way.
in a way, but now I can look back, it was fun, but at the time it wasn't fun. I can remember the time my dad said to me, treat it as an apprenticeship. You know, this might take you 5 years or so, and which an apprenticeship usually does. So, you know, very well, 1982, I was struggling. I didn't know if I was going to be any good. I thought I'd have to give up the game and go for the professional goal, be a professional at a clubhouse and club at a golf club. But then eventually, you know, I remember pre-qualifying for the Open at St. George's, and I'm leading in the qualifying. I shot 67 in the first round, and then the second round, I basically stood on the 18th tee, 80 yards in front of me, out of bounds, and I just picked my clubs up and walked in and drove all the way home, which took me about 10 hours in this van, and said, "Oh well, that's it. I'm going to give up golf." A couple of weeks later, my dad said, "Come on, you know, everybody goes through bad times." And a few weeks later, I've sort of won a tournament, and that changed my life.
Well, kudos to Dad then. I'll have to keep
Yeah,
that in my back pocket.
they believe in you.
Yes, sir. All right, Ian, we appreciate your time. Where it's a bit chillier right now in North Carolina than it is the Caribbean, I'm sure, but
Whereabouts in North Carolina?
Greensboro.
All right, okay. Greensboro, didn't Sandy win in Greensboro?
He did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He sure did.
Long-standing tournament here. I guess it used to be GGO, Greater Greensboro Open, and it's had more names. It's the Wyndham now.
I think he won in 88, I think, or something like that. I remember him winning.
Yeah, exactly. And 10 years before Seve won it,
Yeah, but
his first American win.
I think Faldo's won there as well, I mean.
Seems like And Sam Snead won there 8 times. That's what I know about it.
Well, yeah, all great players win there, I guess.
Yeah,
That's
I used to have a cup that had all the winners' names on it. It was
yeah.
Sam
Now,
Snead, like over and over.
they used to tell some stories at the dinner. Sam,
Oh.
he was a naughty boy. First time I met him was in Kenya. Can you believe it?
Oh.
Sam, yeah, he came and played the Kenyan Open. Oh, he must have been, I don't know, he must have been, I was about, jeez, I must probably only about 20. So God knows, he must have been 30 years older. I mean, probably must have been 50 then or something. Came out and played. Sweet swinging Sam. That was it. I still try and teach my young players now to swing like Sam. It's the only way to go. Get
You
it
think
deeper.
he's had, does he have the best swing you've ever seen, you think?
One of the best rhythms I've ever seen. Oh, yeah, if you look at the motion, you're in the inside, it just comes through it. It's, you know, swings change with different kinds of the equipment, so it is a little different, a bit more. You see the injuries coming these days.
Love what one writer said about watching Sam Snead practice at golf was like watching a fish practicing to swim.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, yeah, that's what I used to do. I used to sort of swing, try to copy him. I just Watson, you know, when I was younger, get them sort of swings in my mind. And if you get a picture of them in your mind, it makes you play better. A little two turns and a swish, you know, that's all it is. A swish and two turns, whatever you want to
Yeah, we've covered baked beans and baby apes and Sam Snead's rhythmic golf swing. This has been fun.
All right, guys. I better go and try it out now.
Yeah, there you go.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.